Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are for June 2009, and we're going to be talking about the sales of the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers. So, yes, there may be copies left on store shelves, but, you know, hey, retailers are ordering what they think they can sell, and a lot of them do a fairly good job at this. Some, not so much. There are always going to be some surprises. And one of the surprises I think this month is just how many comics Marvel came out with in June. They had 119 total items, 11 of which were reorder, but it's still 108 new items on the top 300 list this month. I mean, that is just staggering. Now, with that, they accounted for 55.57% of the total units sold for the top 300 and 57.88% of the total dollars for the top 300 comics.
And they showed great restraint in only having 100 of those 108 be Dark Reign comics.
Yes, yes. And man, those Dark Reign ones are not doing that great. But there's so damn many of them, and you know, they make up for it almost.
There you go.
DC came in second with, you know, 81 items on the list. 78 of them were new, only 3 were reorders. But they only did 29.54% of the total units for the top 300 and only 27.41% of the total dollars. And that's, you know, almost... Marvel did about twice as much business, roughly, in units and dollars than DC. And when you add those two guys together, I mean, that's, again, 85% of the unit sales for the top 300 and about 85% of the dollars for the top 300. Leaving that remaining 15% for everyone else to fight over.
Yeah, well, you know, Marvel, they have a business strategy that's similar to why they invented the shotgun. You don't need to aim if you just, you know, blast out a lot of stuff. So,
you know, on the one hand, I completely agree with that, because there certainly seems to be that kind of... It seems like publishing comics is a lot like making guns or the types of guns. Because like you said, you got the shotgun approach of just splatter stuff out there and see what if you hit something. But it also reminds me of skeet shooting at times. You throw a bunch of stuff out there, see what the market shoots down. Throw another bunch, see what it shoots down. And it seems like most things get shot down. And again, man, the Dark Reign stuff, there's so much of that coming out. But, you know, it's volume, volume, volume in a lot of this.
Well, I mean, I go in the comic shop, you know, different comic shops. And I think because it's Marvel, because Marvel has lots of fans, because people buy Marvel comics, you know, comic shops are not... I don't think most comic shops will not order any issues of a Marvel Dark Reign comic that comes out, you know. They might not order 100 of them. You know, and it also it depends on what kind of incentives, you know, they offer and what kind of variant covers and things like that, because there's certainly a market for, you know, people who collect that sort of thing. But, you know, I go into various different comic shops and every one of them has got copies of all the Dark Reign titles sitting on the shelf. I mean, do they have copies of all the Image, Dark Horse, you know, Boom, Devil's Due, you know, any of these kind of publishers? Not all of them do.
Well, I think that's a little bit of an unfair comparison, because we're talking about properties at Marvel and stuff that are typically going to be selling at a minimum of roughly, say, 10,000, but easily 10 to 20,000 or whatever, whereas your average Image, Boom, or some of these others are going to be well under 10,000, sometimes under 5,000. So the incentive for stores pulling some of these copies in, I think, is very different. Now, you know, you look at how a lot of these Dark Reign things did. We've got Dark Reign Young Avengers at rank 81, Mr. Negative at rank 83, Elektra at 86, Fantastic Four at rank 87, Hood at rank 90, Lethal Legion at rank 97, Zodiac at 101, and these are selling between 22,000 and 27,000 units. Dark Reign Hawkeye actually broke from the pack and sold just under 29,000 units with 28,890. So most of these are, I'm not even going to say necessarily mid-list titles, but lower pack titles. But, yeah, well, you know, even...
I'm making an editorial comment, not a... I mean, certainly, you know, they're going to order the Marvel stuff because there are still Marvel zombies who will buy books because they're Marvel. I mean, I used to be like that, and I'm making more of a comment of, I personally, a lot of those books that most people will not even consider buying, you know, down that sell 3,000 copies are so much better than these Dark Reign. And that's not to say Marvel doesn't put out good comics. Marvel puts out a lot of really good comics, but they put out a lot of really marginal comics too. And what makes me kind of sad is that a marginal comic from Marvel will have people buy it because it's a Marvel comic. Whereas you have some other book that is so much better and people just won't even look at it.
Well, people gravitate towards properties they're familiar with. I mean, that's the nature of audiences to a large degree.
Or logos that they're familiar with, because when you look at it, you know, you look at something like Dark Reign Young Avengers. Well, the title on it is something that they're familiar with. I would imagine most people, none of those characters in that book were things that people were familiar with.
But they're familiar with Young Avengers, which presumably is actually in the second issue, since they ended off the first issue with them showing up. I think I've read the second issue, I'm not sure. Anyways. But, I mean, I see your point. Some of it is a little bit of a bait-and-switch approach, particularly with the Dark Reign stuff, where they kind of are billing it as one thing, yet it's a bunch of villains, you know, impersonating those characters. But I think a lot of people going into Dark Reign Hawkeye knew that was going to be, you know...
Bullseye.
Bullseye, thank you. I'm blanking on the name. You know, and stuff like that. And certainly I'm not saying Zodiac or Lethal Legion have this huge following. A lot of this is just people who are hardcore into the Marvel Universe and like following the big saga. Or have interest in these particular characters. I think there may be a following for the Hood. Or conceivably Mr. Negative. I find that a little harder to believe. But, you know, hey. And there's also the question of the draw of the various creative teams on these books bringing in some people. I do think there's a certain amount that if you did Dark Reign, you know, to be determined, it would get a certain number of sales just based on it being part of the Dark Reign umbrella in Marvel, certainly. You know, and...
I think they have done Dark Reign to be determined, so at least in the solicits. It had a title, but anyway. It just makes me weep sometimes that I see how the orders go, and you know, there are just a lot of good books that people are not interested in, and because they're not interested in them, the stores don't order them, so people don't have the chance to get them. But would they pick them up even if they were there? You know, it's kind of like a tail wagging the dog kind of thing. Or, you know, what came first, the lack of interest or the lack of orders?
I think it's the lack cycle of interest that comes first, but not on the part of the readers. It's a lack of interest on the part of the retailers. Now, granted, retailers have a tough job, and I don't expect them to be interested in everything that comes out in previews, nor even aware of everything that comes out in previews, but what they're not aware of and what they're not interested in, they're not going to order, they're certainly not going to promote and push at their store, and therefore, you know, that's going to impact how well it sells at their store. And I think that the creators and the publishers certainly have the brunt of the promotional responsibility for these books, but it's the people at the stores that have the firsthand knowledge of their customers' interests, their customers' ability to afford what they may be interested in, and to, you know, steer the customers towards the books they'll get the most enjoyment out of.
I mean, I'm just looking down at the bottom of the list here at things that I think personally are really good books that people are not. For instance, Unknown by Mark Waid. We talked about it on a weekly, issue two.
Mm-hmm.
4,485, down from 6,300 in the first issue. Atomic Robo, another 4,531.
Well, I mean,
that actually went up from the first issue.
Let's talk about that Mark Waid one for a minute, because Mark Waid is a known writer who's currently working over at Marvel on Spider-Man. He's doing stuff at Top Cow on the Cyberforce Hunter Killer. Isn't he doing something over at DC at the moment?
I'm not sure.
He's been doing stuff at DC, so he's somebody who's got his fingers in enough, pies across the industry that it's not like he used to be hot and is now hiding over at Boom.
He's also well known. I mean, he's written things like Kingdom Come, that are regarded as being, kind of like, absolute worthy, type of creations.
I mean, I don't want to say he was the Geoff Johns of his day, because I don't really think that's a fair comparison. I think Geoff Johns is the Mark Waid of his day kind of a thing. But I find it interesting that you can take somebody who's an incredibly talented and gifted writer who's doing a brilliant book with Unknown, and it's selling a fraction of what it would be selling if it were at DC, Marvel, I'm not going to say Image, because I think, frankly, if it was at Image, it'd probably be doing right about what it's doing at Boom.
Yeah.
And I think Boom is doing a fairly good job promoting their books. Mark Waid is certainly putting himself out there with the Mark Waid TV on CBR and the blog he's doing. And, so it's not like there's a lack of promotion on this stuff. So the question is, if it's not quality, if it's not promotion, where is the system failing? Why isn't this doing as well as some of his other work has done, or as well as work that may not be as good as this?
Yeah. And when something does hit, here's another one that's down here, 246, Chew number one, 5,246 units. Now, that one was kind of a mini sleeper hit. That one has gotten a lot of buzz and has been selling on eBay for $20, $30 for that first issue, because stores didn't order it. And then all of a sudden people are saying, hey, this is cool. And, it doesn't even take that much. I mean, if like a bad-selling Marvel book, like 10 or 12,000 copies, if that number of people want to buy Chew, that's twice as many people want to buy it as issues exist. Because there were only 5,200 of them,
Well, so, 5,200 that went to retailers through the direct market.
Right.
I mean, who knows how many copies they had. I would suspect they probably had a few more, either just for convention sales, or if nothing else, because of where the price break is and when they print.
But I would venture to guess that most Image books, knowing how most of these kind of Image books sell, they probably don't print 10, 15,000 copies of it.
No, certainly not. But they could easily have done 6,000 or 7,000.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there could be a 1,000 or two. But my point is that the demand on that one seemingly has outstripped the supply. I'll be curious on number two if that one goes up.
Well, I think that's, to me, the telling factor is how the subsequent issue does. Because if there's really that much of a sustainable demand for a title, we ought to be seeing the sales go up, because retailers are realizing they can sell more than they've been selling. And that really doesn't happen that often. Like you're pointing out with Atomic Robo, we're seeing a bit of a bump on this second issue. But again, it's got too many series of track record behind it, so people know what they're getting into with Atomic Robo. Whereas, the majority of the things on this list, we're seeing, issue after issue of drop, which to me is implying, a lack of demand, a lack of sustainable demand, I should say. Now, I do think you're going to have cases where a particular issue of a title, that puppy just sells out and that's that. You know, I know this because I've been trying to fill in some gaps recently. I'm having a hard time finding Cable 11. Most places are sold out of that. They've got issue 9, 10, 12, 13, etc., but that particular issue, you know, the demand was met, or at least the supply was eliminated, I should say.
Some of the ones that stand out, we'll get to the top of the list in a second, but I was just kind of looking at it, at which ones had a decent-sized positive delta mm-hmm. since the previous issue, especially down near the bottom. And what surprised me is Irredeemable, which, you know, that's also Mark Waid. It's not unknown. This one's got, you know, kind of superheroes in it, so maybe it's a little more in the wheelhouse of what people are getting used to. But that one's picking up a little bit of steam, which is heartening because it's an ongoing and not a four-issue limited series. So, you know, you've got a 28% bump going on for issue 3 over issue 2, which is actually quite interesting. I also find it interesting that executive assistant Iris and Aspen Comics, I think it's like a spin-off of Fathom or something, you have a decent-sized bump for the issue number 1, and maybe that's just because it's an issue number 1, because there was an issue number 0 that, you know, sold significantly less. And maybe that's just, you know, people don't buy issue zeros or something.
Well, I think it depends, you know, what all was in that issue 0. Was it worth that money? And, you know, was it a full story or was it just a bunch of sketch stuff? You know, the thing with issue 0 is that it's so hit or miss as to, you know, is it just a 16-page promotional thing for full cost or, you know, an oversized story at a reduced cost?
Right.
So, but, you know, again, with Irredeemable, it's another Mark Waid one that's selling, you know, significantly better than the Unknown is. I mean, that's what, 3 times the sales right there. Same guy, same company. You know, is it that the superhero genre is just that much more popular? You know, given how everyone derides superhero comics as killing the medium in many respects or whatever, I think that's unfounded because it's the only thing keeping the medium around. You know, it's also interesting, you know, just the sometimes kind of the deltas we'll see between issues and stuff. You know, we talked about the Death Trap storyline with the Titan stuff, and then at rank 167 here, we got Vigilante number 7, having just come out of that crossover, thump right back down, I think, where it had been selling before. You know, so actually just a few hundred above where it had been selling and stuff prior to that. So it gets a almost double in sales, loses some of that on the second part of the crossover, and then bam, essentially, like I said, right back where it started. So crossovers make sense for the short term, but they're not resulting in sustainable interest in some of these titles. Now, again, is this a title that needed to be out there and has a sustainable interest or not? I don't know.
You know, going to the top of the list, last month the kind of big thing was that Nothing cracked 100,000, and this month we've got a couple. Batman and Robin soundly cracked 100,000.
Yeah, but the question is by issue 3 or 4, is it still going to be over 100,000? I think it's got a good chance of that, but I think there's also a good chance that it's going to plummet pretty hard because, you know, everything for the top 13 items except for one item had multiple covers. Now, I wish they would have stuck with the old way they did the item codes to where I could tell how many alternate covers this had. But, you know, new Batman and Robin number 1, of course, that's going to do well. Not a big surprise. Captain America 600, of course, that's going to do well. Those are the only things that cracked 100,000. Both of those are major anomalies, and I think Cap's going to be right back down where it had been in the 70 to 80,000 range with the next issue.
Well, Batman and Robin, did that have it might have had an incentive cover, but it certainly didn't have the... I don't remember it having like a 50-50 cover or anything. Cap did. Cap had a 50-50 cover, and then it had like the incentive numbers also on top of that.
It had a cover by Frank Quietly, a variant cover by J.G. Jones, and a sketch variant cover by Frank Quietly.
Right. I think those were both... I think there's a different dynamic at play when it's a 50-50 cover.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Versus the other one.
No, I agree with that entirely. But the 1 in 25 variant by Frank Quietly is going to bump sales a little bit. The,
sure.
You know, the 1 in 250 you know, sketch variant, yeah, that's going to kick in for the people who are actually ordering close to 250 things. Certainly, those are different dynamics than a 50-50 cover, and even the 50-50 cover can have different dynamics depending how different it is. Is it two parts of one image, two totally separate images by different artists? You know, can you order them separately or not? And we're moving away from being able to order them separately because of the diamond threshold changes a while back. So yeah, I mean, all of those have very different sales dynamics, but
because I think you'll get people who'll order if it's like, you know, someone who's a hardcore Captain America fan, as a for instance, they might order both of the 50-50 covers of Captain America 600. You know, same thing. Spider-Man 600 came out. Well, I ordered both of the covers of Spider-Man 600 because I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. Right. So, you know, I think that, you know, that is somewhat of a different thing because the end consumer, you know, could like just be going into it telling their shop, you know, hey, I want both covers of this versus when it's a 1 in 10 or a 1 in 25, then it's more, well, stores might bump their threshold up because they're planning to sell that book for $10 or $15 or something, but it's not necessarily going to be consumer-driven as much, or at least potentially. Same thing to a large extent when it's multiple parts of an image, like that JSA one that came out that had
the three
multiple parts
yeah.
Of the same image. I mean, you'll have people, and I know I bought the different covers because I wanted that whole Alex Ross image, you know, and, you know, I fell right into that trap. But it did pump up sales on that book substantially, I think, just because, you know, I'm not the only one who did that.
No, if I had not been out of work, I certainly would have gotten all three.
Yeah.
And, you know,
so,
I totally agree with that. It's just a case here where I think what we've got is some multiple covers, certainly in the incentive cover and stuff. I think what we're going to see is the second issue, a drop, if those aren't in play with the second issue, and I'd have to go look up if they are or not. But because it's a first to second issue drop, there are a lot of people, it's like, hey, I want to check out this first issue. It's the new Batman, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's a new Batman, as well as a new title, I think we're going to see perhaps a larger second issue drop than normal. Because there were so many other Batman titles coming out, a lot of people may have been sampling that stuff and then pulling back to whatever they liked the best. So I certainly expect the second issue to be probably above 100,000. But again, by that third or fourth, I would expect it to be below that. So to me, this is, you know, I don't want to say a one-time anomaly, but you know what I mean. It's not a sustainable demand at this level. But then again, I don't think any comics can sustain over 100,000 units in sales on a consistent basis. I mean,
Now, how long went between, because Batman and Robin, I mean, I liked it, and I think that a lot of people liked it, but there was more than a one-month gap before issue 2 came out, right? I mean,
that is a good question. The second.
Or did it just come out? Because I don't remember reading number 2 yet.
Let me take a look. Yeah, number 2 came out in July 1st.
Okay.
So it was 1 month exactly. And the week later, the second printing of the first issue came out. So, yeah. But the fact you don't remember it's not a good sign.
Well, it's also that I, you know, running up the convention and I have a lot of unread comics right now.
You and me both. It's one of those things, though, that because it was the first of a new Batman title, I think it got a a bump because of that. Because there hadn't been a Batman title for a few months, it got a little bit of a boost from that. Because it was a new Batman, you know, it's all that stuff. It was a lot of things coming together, and while there's a decent chance this could sustain fairly strong sales for a while, you know, to me, this is not a, oh, we're not out of the woods because things are above the 100,000 mark. Both of these are anomalies, and it certainly more so with Captain America than Batman and Robin number one. You know, Captain America is not going to stay above 100,000, probably not even above 90,000 next month. It's not going to happen. You know, and then the next best-selling thing we had was the Dark Avengers Uncanny X-Men Utopia number one, which came in at 97,641 units. You know, so we had had that in Batman 687, which came in at 96,874 units. You know, so we had a couple of things that did crack that 95K that we did not crack last month. Because another one was also that Dark Avengers number 5. But then Dark Avengers 6 comes in below, you know, 94K. So even titles that had been very strong on the Marvel side, you know, once they shifted the creators and some stuff like that and the characters in some of those teams, those started to lose some steam.
Well, Dark Avengers looks like it's a pretty standard issue over issue drop off. What's interesting to me is rank 8 there, Ultimatum number 4, which actually grew from the previous issue, which again is, you know, somewhat atypical, especially when you're in like a mini series. It's not like it's the start of a new story arc or anything like that, which to me is maybe an indication that people were hearing about Ultimatum and started getting it, you know, midstream or something. It's just, maybe I'm just not remembering. Isn't it kind of unusual for a mini series to pop up in sales at like issue 4?
Isn't that the one where they killed off Spider-Man?
Is it?
I think so.
I thought he died in his own title, but I have not read any of the issues of Ultimatum, so I don't know.
Okay. I think we see the events we see in the final issue of Ultimate Spider-Man were also seen from, I think, a slightly different angle in this issue. So this is the one where I think he actually dies, if he dies, kind of a thing, because it was a little unclear.
Okay.
Whereas his supporting cast and stuff, you know, reacts to that in his own title. So I think that's more likely why we see this bump in sales, because, you know, the other issues were trailing down as normal. And this was only a, you know, bump of, you know, a little over 4,000 units, which still puts it around 10,000 units below issue number 2. So it's not like Ultimatum was really gaining steam at this point. Now, one that I do think is, you know, doing pretty well is Green Lantern. Because with the exception of issue 41, over the last four issues, with 39, 40, and 42, it's been hovering right at that 84 to 85,000 mark. So it's doing pretty well. And again, with the Blackest Night, no big surprise there. You know, I would expect to see the Green Lantern type stuff moving up on the list over the next couple of months, and really a lot of other DC titles as well with Blackest Night. I think we may see the kind of bump on those titles that we saw with Civil War crossovers, and to a lesser degree with the Secret Invasion crossovers.
So another one that kind of stood out to me, and it's probably a draw, that's Detective Comics 854.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a huge drop on that for what I personally is my opinion, probably the best comic that's come out yet this year. That's just me.
But not the least.
The last issue before that though was some like kind of like Death of Batman or something like that. Was it unnaturally high? I'm curious as to what like 852 did.
852 did 56,640 units, which was about 8,000 below the previous issue, and it had been doing around that 64,000-65,000 for the previous couple issues prior to that.
Okay, so this debut is stronger than Detective had been running prior to that one issue that was unusually high.
The issue that was unusually high was part of that whatever happened to the Cape Crusader storyline, cracked 100,000 and did 104,092 units. And this, at the 72,779 units, is indeed stronger than Detective has been in quite some time. Really, you've got to go back. I think you've got to go. You've got to go back to well before the Final Order era for Detective to have done this well at the 72,000-73,000 mark. Aside from that one issue, prior issue,
they've got a second printing of this one out. Too.
But this is one where, again, Greg Rucker's coming on, so there was some interest in that. There was the whole unknown of how would Batwoman do? Would she catch on with the readers or not? J.G. Jones on the art, definite plus.
J.H. Williams.
J.H. Williams, I'm sorry. But it was one where this would have been hard for retailers to accurately gauge the orders on.
Right.
You know, and I think going forward, there's still some question on that. I think it was brilliant. Other people may not. So, you know, this is one that I think we'll see a drop on, but I don't think we're going to see a major drop, and is one that I expect will stabilize at least as well as Detective had been doing before. Again, that you know, 64,000-65,000, you know, but, you know, we'll see how that does. Certainly it'll be doing better than the 50,000 it had been doing for quite some time. You know, and then the question is that enough to spin Batwoman off into her own title whenever they bring Batman back? And it probably will be. Now, another one that's continuing to slide is Thor. It's down to below 70,000 units with 69,540. And given that this had been, you know, over, you know, 100,000 for the first five issues, stayed over 90,000 through issue 8 and stuff. You know, these things just happen over time. Once Straczynski gets off, depending who they put on after that, we may see this drop quite a bit further. Now, I'm not or go ahead.
I'm just curious as to whether they're going to hold the $399 price. Well, I guess it depends on who they bring on. I mean, if they bring on some other really top-notch creative team, it seems like Marvel titles, if they've got, like, a popular character and a name, you know, like Jeff Loeb, Brian Bendis, Straczynski, you know, like some top-notch creators, they can sort of get away with the $399 price point. But, you know, when they put the $399 price points on these minis and other things that have got relatively unknown creators, they are not doing the, you know, 60, 70, 80,000, you know, and up numbers that you see their books able to sustain when they've got the top name creators. So I'm just curious, you know, on Thor, do they put another really top-notch creative team to follow Straczynski, or do they go with someone who's less, you know, cachet to their name? And if so, do they keep the $399 price, and then what does that do to the sales? That'd be kind of interesting to me.
I'll be really surprised if they drop the price.
Yeah.
I just don't see that
happening. Once they establish it. So that's the thing, you know, if like they bring in, you know, I don't even want to name a name, but I mean, if they bring in someone who's not, you know, like they could probably bring in Matt Fraction, you know, they could bring in Rick Remender. I mean, they've got like some up and comers that, you know, have enough cachet to their name that, could maybe sustain it. Also depends on how much of a departure. You know, a lot of times a new team will come on and they'll, like, you know, take a 90-degree turn off of how the series has been going. So
I don't think we're going to see a major direction change because they're already gearing up Thor for the next, as the core of the next major event. So I think that course has been charted. It's just a question of who's going to, you know, steer the ship on it. And Straczynski doesn't seem to be, you know, in favor of being in the center of those kinds of events, so that's why he was bowing out. Which, you know, hey, makes sense. Batman Streets of Gotham only started at 57,627 units, which, you know, hey, isn't too bad. It's, you know, ranked 28, but is one that I'm going to be real interested to see how it goes, because it wasn't bad, but it wasn't brilliant, and I expect to see that one slide down More probably towards the 40,000 range.
One of those will be me not buying issue number two.
Let's see. Gotham City Sirens number one came in at 52,418. That one, I think, has a slightly better chance of retaining sales. But again, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Batman titles shake out over the next couple of months, because essentially they hit the reset button on the sales for those. We're at the start of new sales trends.
Yeah. I'll be curious, you know, when they, you know, since they've pretty much canceled the Ultimate line, is that going, I suspect it's going to work for them. I mean, I'm already hearing people, like, all excited because they're going to be doing some kind of hollow foil gimmicks or something on the first issues of the new Ultimate books or something. So, you know, those should sell really well.
I think the first issue of the Ultimate Comics will do well. It's the second, third, and fourth that I'm more curious about. Because I ordered the first couple. It's like, you know, I'll give them an issue. But once I heard about the hollow foil and all this other kind of marketing glitz and stuff, it's like, I'd rather you spend the time and effort on the story. But that's just me.
It is just you, because I think it's pretty demonstrated that story does not sell comics. A glitzy package that you must buy is what sells comics.
I'm not even going to say that sells comics. I think it does better than the story. But, and again, we're seeing a lot of these things, you know, dropping pretty harsh between issues.
I've seen on various places people talking about the snazzy cover and look at the beautiful cover and oh, I need to buy that, and nowhere have I heard someone say, wow, that sounds like a really interesting story, that's why I'm going to buy the first Ultimate one. So.
Well, and I think that's why sales continue to drop on most ongoing titles is they're not getting people hooked on the stories in most cases, which understandable but unfortunate. Now, it's interesting that All-New Savage She-Hulk is down at rank 113 with 20,512 units, which is actually up slightly from the previous issue, but still down from the initial 23,217 units the first issue did. But I find this interesting because they're apparently going to try to spin this character into, I guess, Incredible Hulk 601 or something. And they seem to think this character is worth, you know, using, you know, going forward. And these are not horrible sales numbers, but certainly not one that made me think, oh, wow, we've got a cash cow character here. But few characters are that these days. Let's see what we got in the middle of the list that looks interesting. We got Buck Rogers number one. It did 17,457 units, down at rank 127. We've got the Time Storm 2099 stuff for Spider-Man and X-Men. It ranks 130 and 132, having done 16,867 for the Spider-Man issue and 16,639 for the X-Men issue. Those aren't too bad.
Unwritten dropped significantly after the $1 debut,
which
no big great surprise there.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really great comic. At least stores ordered it at the promotional price point. I mean, and for a Vertigo title, that's relatively decent numbers. So,
well, and they probably had to figure out what they were ordering on this before anyone had really seen or read that first issue. So this is one that I would expect to see not drop much more on the third issue and possibly start to level off or go up. You know, I think the change we're seeing here in the 39.5% drop-off is strictly because of the price point difference. Retailers ordered a lot more of that first issue because it was only a dollar. Now that it's at the $2.99, they're saying, well, I'm going to throttle back to what I would have normally ordered.
I'm finding the fact that a lot of these Zenoscope titles are selling around the 10,000 mark. You know, you got like Grim Fairy Tales selling 10,000 copies. That somewhat surprising to me when I look at, I mean, I've read Grimm Fairy Tales, and it's an okay comic, but you know, I look at, it's nudging in right above Madame Xanadu from Vertigo, like
multiple covers.
Madame Xanadu, yeah, I know that, but I'm just saying Madame Xanadu is so good, and that it's selling under 10,000 is sad to me. And Matt Wagner's doing a really good job on that title. But there is a sales model at Zenoscope that is working relatively well for them. I mean, if you look at, you know, every issue has got at least two regular kind of covers, and then there's lots of variant, you know, covers that all have hot, scantily clad females on them. And it's a marketing technique that is doing pretty fair business for them, you know, because you got like the Red Queen one shot that had two or three covers, as I recall. I mean, I bought it, one of them anyway. I mean, it sold 8,500, you know, but you look at a lot of the things that are below it, and I read those comics. They're okay comics, but, you know, as far as, you know, story goes, there's a lot of stuff farther down the list that's got better stories, but those have snazzier covers, and you know, that's what's pulling people's eye to it.
Well, part of it's just fighting for attention. There's so much in previews for retailers to go through. There's so many things on the comic book racks for readers to go through that they're going to gravitate towards, you know, whatever catches their attention for whatever reason, be it a flashy cover, good word of mouth, who knows, maybe even story potential. You know, it all comes down to, I don't want to say shouting the loudest and getting people's attention, but sometimes that's what it takes. Now, 46% of the items on the list, which is 138 of them, are at a $299 price point, but 116 items, or 38.67% of the items on the list, were at the $399 price point. So I think we're starting to get close to a tipping point where, you know, more and more things are going to that $399 price point, and we're just going to have to deal with that, which kind of sucks, but, you know, hey. Now, out of all the items on the list, I could not find, or my system could not find, previous issues for about 63 of them. It found previous issues that sold less, or issues, let me rephrase that, for 180 items on the list, they sold less than the previous issue that was found in the system. For 45 items on the top 300 list, they sold more than the previous issue, which is about 15%, which is good, but when you total up the losses versus the gains from an issue-to-issue basis, we're still down 323,287 units. And this is an issue-to-issue comparison, not a month-to-month comparison. And that's important because you get things like PvP, number 42, at rank 297, where the previous issue to that issue, actually the previous issue I have in my database, because issue 41 didn't make the list of the top 300 the month it came out, but issue 40 did, but that was back in September 2008. So again, we're not doing, you know, a month-to-month total there so much as a issue over previous known issue. And when you get to the bottom of the list, some things don't make the cut every month. The list bottomed out at 2,917 units, which, not too bad. The midpoint on the list was 13,232 units. Everything below rank 114 sold below 20,000 units. So, a lot of comics are out there. A lot of them are doing okay. Even some ones that, you know, like we said, are really good or whatever, are just not getting the business through the stores. Now, some of these are going to do additional sales, certainly through conventions. This is where I think some of the smaller publishers may do better, but frankly, I'm less convinced of that, having just been to San Diego. One of the issues I was trying to get was the third issue of Star Trek Countdown from IDW. I went to the IDW booth. Nope, don't got it. It's like, well,
I think that's a publisher by publisher.
Oh, certainly.
Thing though.
But I went to Boom to find some stuff, Cape Number 2 or whatever. They didn't have it. I went to Udon to go find something. They didn't have it. Certainly Marvel and DC aren't going to be selling their own stuff. Radical had all of their stuff, I believe. Dark Horse I didn't really check anything at. I mean, certainly it's a publisher by publisher stuff, and the smarter publishers have their material at their booth.
It seems like a publisher like IDW or Devil's Due certainly should carry their own books there, because retailers are not bringing indie books. If they even carry them at all, they're certainly not bringing them with to sell at San Diego.
Well,
or, you know, whatever show.
Beyond just having them to sell, there's one other thing I think they should do. They should have them to display. Whether
right.
it's the actual comics or just cover images. I went by the Archaea booth a number of times at the convention. Never saw any trace of Titanium Rain even existing. And, I mean, I know you had said that it did pretty well when Josh and Kat were there. I bumped into
them. They had a big stack of them, and they sold them all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bumped into them Sunday afternoon, and they were telling me that they did really good business there, and that's great. But had I not talked to you on that, had I not seen them in person, and just gone to the booth the times I did, it's as if the title didn't exist.
Well, they didn't have a poster of it, and that, you
that's
know...
That's my point.
That would have been nice. Now, I will say, like, Avatar had pretty decent backstock of their books available for sale at their booth. Boom, for the most part, they seem to... They're really big on the convention variant cover stuff, and they were selling lots of, you know, sketch cover this, Mark Waid is evil cover that,
but they seem to have the regular covers as well, and I think they did a fairly good job, even though they didn't have what I was looking for. I did buy a few other things from them, and they seem to have a good selection of their stuff out there. Now, what I'm noticing with a lot of these publishers is once something goes to trade, they're going to bring the trade, not the component issues.
Right.
So if you're missing one of the component issues, or if for whatever reason you just want the issues, you're going to be out of luck. I'd have bought the first Eureka miniseries if they'd had it as issues. But they didn't, so I didn't. I did buy the Mr. Stuffin, or whatever the teddy bear comic series was that was the three issues. I picked that up because it looks cool. But... You know, a lot of these publishers, again, even if they're not going to have the comics and stuff, they should have very clear at their booth what properties they've got. IDW, I think, could have had a better showing for the Star Trek titles, certainly for the Doctor Who titles. There were some that they were spotlighting because they had the creators and stuff, and that makes sense. There were some they had for sale. That makes sense. But just walking by, these booths really ought to act more as billboards to a degree than they do.
Now that I'm thinking of it, was there any Dynamite booth there?
You know, I don't know.
I don't recall there being one.
I don't know. I recall seeing one. I've got the floor plan for San Diego here, and let me see if it's got a big enough... if it did, it wasn't big enough to make it onto the map as a... An,
I mean,
because
I remember DC, Marvel, obviously, IDW, you know, I remember Aspen, Top Cow, Image, Avatar, Archaea, Zenoscope. I'm looking at all these publishers, Boom, Bongo, Archie. I mean, I went to all these
Archie
booths.
I don't think had a booth.
Not Archie. Well, I was seeing a lot of Archie stuff at Bat and Lash's booth. But
true. I don't recall seeing a Dynamite booth either, and I think I would have noticed it because presumably they would have had some of the upcoming Stargate stuff. But again, you know, missed opportunity. I will say one of the biggest missed opportunities at Con in terms of promoting books was at the DC booth. As I was driving out, I told my sister, if you happen to be by the DC booth and they happen to be giving out those Black Lantern rings that they have with the first issue of Darkest Night, get me as many as you can. Every time I went to the DC booth, no sign of really any giveaways other than the little pins and stuff, which I'm not into. Well,
my niece, I saw my niece the other day, and she actually ended up with a Blackest Night ring from the DC booth. So apparently they were giving them out.
I was going to say, they were giving them out.
Many of them, as you know, in past years when they were giving out the Green Lantern or the Sinestro rings, I mean, they were giving them out at various points when I walked by, and they seemed to have plenty of them. It seems like since they're having the big push on Blackest Night, they would have been a little more...
They did have rings. Kathleen went by at one point, talked to Mike Carlin, mentioned that I'd said, hey, get these, and she got me a couple. But every time I went by, I didn't really see any giveaways of any sort or any major promotional push for Darkest Night. And if I were working for DC Promotion and had a budget capable of doing this, I would have not only made the Black Lantern rings, but I would have made rings for all the other cores, even the Indigo one, which may not use rings, but hey, what the hell. And I'd have had big plastic, you know, fiberglass tubes, clear tubes, with just, you know, floor to ceiling of these rings. You know, and let people as they come by, hey, you know, what color are you? Let them grab one. They want another one, they got to stand in line again, whatever. But get people excited about Darkest Night. Have people walking around the convention center, not just with the Black Lantern ring, but maybe a yellow one or a blue one or a purple one or, you know, whatever. The red ones and stuff like that. And get people hyped up for the storyline. And every time I went by the DC booth, it was just kind of blah. There wasn't any major activity, there wasn't major interest, and it was usually empty at the center of the booth. Every time
they had lots of lines. I mean, they had lines for various creators who were sketching or, you know, giving away some... I think they were giving away... They always give away posters, which is a big thing for DC, is to give away posters. And I saw lots of lines around the DC booth to, you know, stand in line to get, you know, that. But like you said, in past years, there's been a lot more activity in the middle of the booth, and this year it did seem to be empty a lot.
Wasn't the people there, and then you look at the Marvel booth, which is more Marvel Studios than Marvel Comics, it was packed. And then, you know, you look at these breakdowns of the sales figures, where Marvel's doing over half the units for the top 300, and DC's doing lucky to be close to a third.
Marvel always had something going on, and I know because I stopped by the Arkea booth many times during the con, and they were right across from Marvel. And every time I stopped by there seemed to be something going on at Marvel, and maybe, you know, it's like kind of a Carnival Barker atmosphere, but it was effective at drawing people into the booth, and they'd have people in costumes, they had, you know, this or that. They had lots of creator signings where they were up on a thing. But, I mean, there was always a crowd around the Marvel booth. And I kind of tried to avoid it a little bit. But they had a huge buzz going on at that booth that did seem to be somewhat missing at the DC booth.
And I'm not really in favor of the Carnival Barker mentality. And certainly I think that's more a Marvel style than a DC style. But certainly at Comic-Con, and I think just marketing in general for comics, that's what you got to do, and that's what works. You know, there are a lot of booths I could walk right by and be oblivious to the contents of the booth. And with a floor that big, I'm not going to go back. And to me, that's kind of a metaphor for the comic industry itself, because if I'm not interested in a comic when I flip past it in previews, you really can't count on me going back to that page a second time and becoming interested in it. You know, if I even go back to that page at all. So I think a lot of these properties, a lot of these comics are kind of dying on the vine in some respects because nobody's pointing them out to the right readers that would be interested in them. They may be great comics, but they're going ignored by readers, by retailers, sometimes by the industry in general almost. And it's a communication issue. You know, they've got to be matching these books with the right readers for them, and that's not easy to do. And I certainly want to see it done better for things like The Unknown, other stuff we like that's at the bottom of the list. And, you know, again, it's just funny to me to see that kind of personified in San Diego. And this is one of the few years where I thought the sales dichotomy between Marvel and DC was really visible on the hall floor between their two booths.
Right.
Because in past years, Marvel really hasn't had a booth. So.
Now, one thing I'll give credit to, you know, regardless, I haven't read it yet, but like that Mayhem number one comic from Tyrese Gibson, I mean, that dude was like out pimping the book. And I respect that. I mean, he's like out trying to do it. And it's like, I heard people talking about, you know, he was like in the lobby of his hotel talking about it, and he's out here and there talking about it.
He was marketing and promoting the book.
Yeah. And if you have a celebrity, you know, hell, if they're willing to go out and do that, I think that's tremendous, and that should be applauded. You know, it's like you get some celeb who's attached to a book. You know, similarly over at Radical, you know, you got Nick Simmons doing that
Incarnate
book. And, you know, he was out at the booth and he had his dad, you know, which, you know, Gene Simmons, the guy's a draw, you know, and it's like love him. He's like helping his son out, you know, his son's doing a comic, so he's helping his son push that comic. And, you know, there was, you know, at the Radical booth, you had Nick and Gene Simmons there. And, you know, you never see Gene Simmons unless he's got like five or six hot girls like orbiting around him. And they're there. And there's a huge crowd at the booth because of that. And, you know, it was kind of drawing some excitement and some buzz to the product, you know. And
now, if we can
that's
just
a good thing.
Now, if we can just get these people to be doing that year round.
Yeah.
Not just on the floor in San Diego, we'll start to have something here. You
right.
know, because I'm real curious how Incarnate does, how Mayhem's going to do, how some of these other things that are actually getting a push behind them.
Yeah, the Incarnate has actually, apparently I was talking to the guys at the Radical booth, has actually sold out from them for the first printing of the first issue.
Interesting.
You know, it comes out like they had it at the show. They mm-hmm. had a bunch of them. I think they had sold them by the end of the show. I mean, they had hundreds and hundreds of them on the first day of the show, and I think they sold them all.
I wish there was some way to get sales figures for stuff on the hall floor.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to know, you know, with Mayhem, with Incarnate, with some of these convention exclusives, some of these other things that they're really kind of, you know, releasing and stuff, how those things are doing, what kind of volume some of these publishers are doing and creators are doing. I mean, every time I go to Brian Wood's booth at San Diego, I want to give him a lot of credit for how he handles his booth. He's always standing up behind his table. Now, first off, he's usually got a line of people and he's signing stuff and he's moving product and stuff. But just the simple act of standing up behind his booth and interacting with the fans compared to what I will call the somebody just shot my dog sitting and moping pose that a lot of people have at their booth gives the booth a very different dynamic. And, you know, he's got his product there. He's not doing the Carnival Barker hard sell, but he's also very much kind of in the moment. I'm here with my books. Let me sell them to you. You know, in a kind of a low-key but effective way. And I'd love to know how much business he does at San Diego and the other conventions he goes to, because, again, every time I walked by the booth, he's got a, not a huge line, but, you know, a steady stream of three or four people, and as soon as one goes, seems like another one's coming to take their place. So the numbers I see for his stuff here, just based on what he's doing at conventions, is going to be low. Plus, you look at the global sales, et cetera, et cetera. But it's always fun to watch how these companies promote their books face-to-face, having seen how they're doing it, you know, through previews, through online places like Newsarama, Comic Book Resources, etc., and various podcasts and stuff all year. So, all in all, interesting stuff. This was a decent month. It was, June was really right around average in terms of estimated number of units. It was a little above by, I don't know, we'll say 40, 50,000. In terms of total dollars, it was above average for the final order era, which goes back to February 2003. The total dollars was above average by, I'm going to say, almost three million units. $3 million, I mean. So, you know, Marvel had the, again, the win with just a staggering market share of 55.57%, which I believe is the highest they've ever had, and certainly the biggest lead they've ever had over DC, because, again, they had a lead of 26.03%. So, you know, really, I think with the coming months, it's going to be, can DC fight back with Darkest Night and you know, give Marvel a run for their money? I'm hoping they can. We've read the first issue of Darkest Night. We reviewed it. It's great. So they've got the quality there. It's just a question of, is the sales and is the audience there? So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.